If we just mark this day down, please. It's the first time in world history that I was here before Laura Christine. I mean, I was here after Laura Christine. After. Usually I sit in the car and, you know. Wait.
Text me, are you coming?
Yes, and text her, are you coming? I don't think your mic's on, Laura. Is it?
I know, mine's on.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Now
so,
you can hear Laura, right?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Everyone can hear everyone. And we're recording. I'm going to turn on my timer so I know how we're doing in time. And then we can begin. All right.
And here's hoping Mona's thought of something.
Can you take Polly away from us? Polly. So she doesn't make noise. Good morning, Maka'ala.
Good morning.
I was just asking my daughter to take the dog away.
I heard.
If you hear dogs, that's
it is
that's
what
it is.
It's life. It's life.
That's okay. Background sounds are fine.
Yeah. Background sounds make us real. Then they know that we're not robots.
You might hear a grumpy teenager come into the room, too.
I spent 10 minutes arguing on the phone with a robot the other day before I realized it was a robot and then decided, okay, well, this is a major waste of time. Let's stop doing this. Oh, gosh. I wonder what I wonder if there's a robot union.
Okay, I'm hitting go.
Okay, she's hitting go. Good morning. Welcome to Pilikia Opono, KKCR, famous once a month Wednesday morning crack of dawn show. This particular show is being pre-recorded because all of us have other things that we are committed to on Wednesday. So it will not be a call-in show, but you can certainly call KKCR or email gm@kkcr.org if you have questions or comments about the program. And please remember that I am Maka'ala, and with me is Mauna Kea, and with us today is also Mauna. Introduce our guest.
We have Aaron Trask today.
We're coming
aloha.
Up. Aloha. We're coming up in the world. If you have ideas for future shows, we welcome them. Doesn't mean we'll do them. Means we welcome them. Please remember that Mauna has very generously provided references for most of his cited stuff. When he says, so-and-so says, da-da-da-da, he's actually provided those references for KKCR, and they have posted them on the archive page. So if you think he's dreaming most of this stuff up, he actually has citations for what he says. I'm the one that makes stuff up. So there is that. So Pilikia Opono was devised and dreamt up by Laura Christine, and we thank her for engineering for us today and every time we do this show. It was very brave of her, and it was a good idea. What would it be like if this was occurring in Kingdom Times? What do we know about Kingdom Times? What do we see as relevant from then to now? And frankly, Laura Christine and I were just talking about Mauna Kea has just been honored as a special land use attorney. And we don't have a lot of them, I don't think. I don't know. Would they fill the room, Mauna? I don't think so, yeah.
You mean in Hawaii?
Yeah, a land use attorney. Somebody who specializes in land use.
I don't know. I'd say there's a bit.
No. Well, I don't know where they're hiding. They're in somebody's cave because they're hard to find. Where are they when you need them? but when comes up in casual conversation, I say, you know, a lot of that, those rules, those ideas, those concepts came from Kingdom Time. What? Yeah, they came from Kingdom Time. And
absolutely,
it's a good reference to remember. Like it's my way of saying it's not my fault, but But it's true, right? And that's probably true of every location. But it's really available to us, our kingdom time rules and behaviors are well recorded, well written, and that's what Mauna uses. So good morning, and we're today joined by Mauna's better half, and wanted just to talk a little bit about what she's been working on, and I'm going to let you take it, Mauna, because after that, I don't remember what we said.
Okay, yeah. So joining us today is, I guess, my wife, but not in the possessive sense.
There's no good way to say that, is there?
Yeah. I don't know, you know, grammatically, my wife. But this is Erin Trask, maiden name Erin Town, born and raised Kauai, 1979, from the beautiful green Omau, Kauai. And I'll let her tell it our audience, our huge, expansive audience, about who she is real briefly. And today we're going to talk about a paper she wrote recently. She went back to UH to get her undergraduate degree about colonization of Hawaii. And that's spelled by the portmanteau Kalo-Nization, trademark pending, and all variations thereof. We're going to T-shirt the heck out of that.
Yes, I want one. I want one. I want one in purple.
Yeah, we'll get colonizer, colonization, colony, all variations thereof.
Colonation.
Yeah. Colonoscopy, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's what it feels like some days, huh? Well, thanks for joining us, Erin. I really appreciate it, and I am so respectful and delighted that you chose to go to school. I think, you know, you raised your family and you've done all those things that men do half the things. We all know that, but to go back to school is a big deal, and I give you all due credit, because that's not easy to do. And I don't know you're welcome. I don't know what your classes are made of demographically. Are there a lot of people that have lived a life first and then gone back, or are they mostly youngsters?
Oh no.
Oh, dear.
It is so humbling. It's crazy. So yeah, it's something I kind of always wanted to do, go back and finish my degree. And since now we're living right up the road from the university and I'm still on this school schedule with my high schooler, I thought, what a perfect time. So I'm at UH. I thought I would be going online, but I'm mostly in person because those are the classes that I need. And it is the most humbling experience ever, because I'm in my 40s and most of the kids are my children's age. And so the first couple weeks, I literally cried just because I felt so out of place. It's also kind of weird because I don't really look like I'm in my 40s. So
no,
people
don't
really know what I am. They know I'm not young, though. So where else is I going with this? But I'm kind of used to it now. It's really interesting. I get a perspective of the younger generation, almost like a fly on a wall. And I can understand my kids a lot better. And I can really understand the generation that's coming up with the new workforce and what kind of education they're getting, where they're coming from. I even make friends with them. So that's really neat. And it's a different experience than most people our age, to understand that the next generation from their own perspective.
Yeah. Especially not as a parent, right? Because it's a different, you're compadres, you know, you're students together.
Yeah, exactly. And like this year I'm actually, hired by the university to tutor. So technically,
well, that didn't take long.
Of UH as well. and the education is different than when we were in college, because AI and there's so many advances, and it's a completely different experience. So So, yeah, and, you know.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine. I don't want to do it. I can imagine. I would. My personality, I would like to just sort of take over the class and say, no, that's not really how it went. So what are the classes that you're taking, specifically? And I'm thrilled that they're in person. I think that's great. And the interaction and energy that happens when you're in in-person class, unless you've got a couple of real jerks there, but for the most part, that's you know what I mean. It's so much better than online. I think it's pretty easy to excel. You know, your own pace, your own timing, your own schedule, your own whatever. But in person, you kind of it's a different boogie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm fulfilling my undergrad requirements. So some just basic classes that I took. Some interesting classes I've taken so far is the geography of water. And that really focused on water issues in Hawaii. And my teacher, Kagawa Viviani, she's a water commissioner for the state.
Mm.
So that was super interesting, and she's super knowledgeable.
Hopefully.
I took a Literatures of Hawaii with Candace Fujikani, who's an author. That was also pretty interesting, reading, some works by our auntie Hana Nikkei and other authors. And I've taken Hawaiian 101, and I'm reluctantly signing up for Hawaiian 102.
Yeah.
That's pretty... At my age, it's hard to learn a new language. Even if born and raised here and familiar with a lot of vocabulary, it's really,
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But the great teachers, wonderful teachers, Sam Gaughan, Carlos Andrade, have all tried to teach me again. I was born here as well. And again, I have a lot of vocabulary, but I don't know the patterns. I don't know the right... My pidgin is hot, but, that's it. And I think at the end of several trials, Carlos finally looked at me and said, "Just use your pidgin." Okay.
Yeah. Well, now they even teach pidgin. It's like,
wow.
You could take a class on pidgin, which is so cringy to read. It's not meant to be read. I don't like it.
I can imagine.
I'm taking a lot of English courses. So I was originally majoring in English. There's some, you learn about Foucault and Said and Orientalism, all this theory. What is that?
And how different it is from what we do here. How different it is from how we think of water here. The whole concept of public trust doctrine and all that stuff. It's really different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and they also integrates Hawaiian stuff into every class. That's in my experience, at least. So even like my straight up English class has nothing to do with Hawaii. They bring in authors like Brandy McDougall, Nalani McDougall, and she's a poet, and Hanani Kei, and all kinds of other authors. And they talk a lot about colonization, and it's a very woke, in quotes, university in my experience so far, which I don't know how I feel about that exactly, but there's a lot of ideology and discourse about what the utopia of what Hawaii used to be. And so that's kind of what my paper's about, is it wasn't the utopia that is the narrative now. So I don't agree with everything that I'm hearing at UH, although I appreciate and respect it.
Do you get into conversations with your own kids about it? Is there a difference between what they're learning and what you're learning?
My own kids. So my son is actually ahead of me in college. He's studying business. So he's not taking the same kind of classes that I am. And... but he did go to Kamehameha. So, yeah, they kind of learned the same thing there. My daughter is exactly the same level as me, and she is taking most of her classes online because she works a lot. And so she's not getting the same education either. It's just, yeah, it's kind of different than what I'm getting.
Dinner time conversation must be interesting. Must be interesting. It's just, you know, if they're willing to talk at all. Sometimes at that age, they're just in their own heads and in their own trip, right?
Oh, very much, yeah. And they know a lot. Like, they know everything at their age.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. I remember that. It took me a long time. Actually, some would say I'd never graduated from that phase. So a lot of the current today voices I hear, we take that land back and da-da-da-da-da-da, do describe a utopian kind of existence back then when there was a king, and they have no idea what it's like to live under a king or a queen or under a non-democratic system. In my opinion, they don't know what they're talking about, but they're just dissatisfied with what's going on now, and they figure that must have been better, you know, that has to be better, that other thing over there has to be better, grass is greener kind of syndrome. But to have one of your teachers be on the Water Commission is extraordinary. Wow, that's great, because they're dealing with some stuff right now that really hits all those buttons, especially the Maui issues that they're dealing with. You know.
Oh yeah, it's so interesting, and that class actually. That specific class did have more students that were older and, you know, like coming back and getting their master's and everything. And she was so knowledgeable and passionate about what she did. And the water issues are everything in Hawaii. I mean, it all boils down to the water issues on island.
That's right. In fact, everywhere in the world. Most of my environmental education was in Northern California, and the folks with whom I studied and worked would say to me, everything is either about water in or water out. There's nothing else to it. And we learned in Haena, water in wasn't an issue, but water out is, right? For Hanalei, water in's not an issue, but water out is. So it's either, you know, the different philosophies of how water is managed, if you can manage it. I'm of the opinion that you don't manage water. You live with it. You know, whatever it's going to do is what it's going to do. And Hanalei has taught me that. So what was your paper called?
Okay, so my paper, the title is Colonization, K-A-L-O,
colonization,
a prosaic analysis of the co-evolution of subsistence strategies and socio-political complexity in pre-contact Hawaii.
Good Lord. Okay. Yeah,
I honestly wrote that
on a book page. Jiminy Christmas.
Yeah, I honestly wrote that with a little bit of humor.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it sounds like Mauna took over your life. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. You just have to have fun with it, because school is kind of like drudgery. So you kind of have to F around a little to make it tolerable.
Yeah, for sure, which was my strong suit in school, too. Yeah, I was good at that. Okay, so what was your premise? What was the reason for writing that paper?
So I had to write that was an anthropology class. I had to write a paper about an ancient civilization. And since Mauna Kea is my husband and I have such a great resource at hand and we have this bookshelf full of Hawaiian books, I asked if I could do it on Hawaiians, even though it wasn't really an ancient civilization.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why I chose that. I could have chosen Egypt or anywhere else, but I wanted to use the resources that I had on my bookshelf, basically.
Yeah.
And so what I covered in this paper is the subsistence strategies, political systems and organizations, religion and mythology. Colonization is the term Mauna Kea actually thought of, so I can't take credit for it.
Oh, it's okay. We'll never know.
What it stands for, it just kind of is the sum of my paper. It's the ground-up process by which Native Hawaiians occupied and constructed their society. So it's a theory that society didn't descend from the gods first, which is like a really popular narrative, but grew up from the resource base in response to mounting environmental pressures.
Wow.
So it's taking, you know, a subject that's been thoroughly studied and just looking at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, and actually very, very, very pertinent to what's going on in life today. If there were no, I like to, when I was teaching, I'd love to say to my students, imagine there were no humans. What would this place look like if there were no humans? And when you narrow that down to looking at water, it's interesting. What would it look like if there were no humans? You know, in some places, in some places, the land would just be a sponge, you know, and it wouldn't be doing what we call, you know, running stupid everywhere. In some places, it would manage itself. You know, it would go to the softer parts of the dirt, avoid the rocks. But eventually, it all got to the ocean somehow. And how we've changed that, you know, how we've made it move, how we've made it behave differently to what we think is our advantage. And in my world, in my opinion, how we never win that war. We never win that fight. The water always wins. And if you look at life like that, Did the old Hawaiians know that there was no real management of it, that it was going to be and do what it was going to be and do, and they had to figure out, were they living with it or were they managing it?
Well, when they first got here, so what I talked about in my paper, Mauna Kea can talk about this much, much deeper and more broadly than I can. I'm definitely not expert on any of these subjects. I just,
that's why we wanted you on, girl.
Smart people about this. But, you know, when they first got here, Mary Kavena Pukui, and this is where we got the word colonizer, referred to the Hawaiians as the first colonizers in these islands. And they got here and it was this resource rich land, flightless birds, like no competition. And they basically, like, ate up all the flightless birds, and they were a smaller society. They didn't need a lot of management. But as they grew in population, and that's when they started to need to manage the water and manage the resources. And that's how society, as we know it, started. Right?
Evolved.
It's always been evolving.
Yeah, but it started management. That's a very interesting idea. There's another book. How it didn't really start to be a thing, management, until it was required because we had eaten all the easy stuff. And lived with all the easy stuff, right? And then all of a sudden we started looking around and go, uh-oh, maybe we better save some of that for tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Aaron, she's looking at me going, talk. I'm saying, no, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, she's doing a great job. She's doing a great job.
I'm so much better at writing than speaking. Oh. I don't like being in the spotlight at all.
I know you don't. I know you're shy. I know you well enough to know that. And I don't care. You're still on the radio with me. I'm delighted that you were willing to do this. This is great. And you don't, you know, you the world according to Mauna will shift as you further your education and as you, you know, just living in that hood, in that neighborhood around the university, you know, the people that you run into just when you're walking down the road or whatever, you know, it's a different conversation, right? Than can be had many other places. So then we started to think, well, maybe we can't just eat all the birds after they were mostly gone.
Yeah. Oh,
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry. And so, you know, it's been really good to get, you know, like be here while Erin gets her education, does her own research, and it gives me someone to talk to because people always glaze over when I start talking.
Oh, yeah,
so
Mona, we really do.
But the fact that she has to, you know, she has to ask me questions and be interested for her grades is great. I take full advantage of it. But so, yeah, in reading Kirch, she read Kirch and all these authorities, and if you look, the data really shows that, and it makes sense. I mean, imagine coming to Hawaii in, let's say, 300 AD, and it's just, no one's there. It's totally pristine. And all the windward sides of the island are the first occupied. That's a pattern, clear pattern. And then you can even look at tax maps from the county, and you can see, you know, like Uncle Carlos, his kuleana. There's like a handful of kuleanas in that area along a stream. And there's not a lot at all. And they're in the gullies and everything like that. And why? It's because that's where the water is. And the technology was as such where you couldn't really move it anywhere else, so you had to be there. Fast forward, and as population increases, they eat more birds, eat all the land crabs, and then the little Ohana's kalo patch has to get bigger. So you need more people to do that. And that creates more kalo, which creates more population, which further lessens the endemic resources, and you just create this feedback loop where increasing population size, increasing environmental pressures, increased complexity. And then really it's like a domino effect. And it appears Kirch has this really good chart in one of his papers that Erin found. It just correlates directly. And then with that, he says, you know, on or about 1000 AD or whatever, Hawaiians migrate to the western portions of the island, which there's less water but more land. And so then you look at Hanapepe and Waimea, and there's a ton of kuleana all around the rivers over there in the valleys. And why? Because there's more people. And you need more complex stuff. And so then you see the emergence of Ali and that governmental structure. And then Pa'au comes in about the 1200s. And brings coup and human sacrifice and the kapu system, which really is the enforcement mechanism to ensure that the ahupua'a system works. And even Erin found in Handy's book, Native Planters, Pukui describes the ahupua'a not as a resource management structure, but as a political one. And so then, you know, putting all this together, it really seems that, and this is not to lessen the value of the myths and legends, but as an exposition, you know, to say Papa and Wakea made Hawaii, okay, that's a poetic way to describe it. But really, if you look at it, the Makainana made it. They are the root of the colonization. From them grew the ali'i, which were necessary to organize and solidify the labor structure and agricultural, you know, economic process. And then they create the gods to whom they're related, and they themselves were gods, to solidify their power to enforce the kapu, which, you know, life or death, right? You had to be able to, and you have to have some kind of divine right to rule the water, to rule the land, and to rule people. And so it's like a reverse, which is really neat.
It is really, you know, neat. I'm sort of watching the clock and thinking we might give ourselves a little bit of a break. And just as I say that, Laura Christina's handing me, yes, the thing I always forget to say, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Kauai Community Radio, and this is Pilikia Opono with Maka'ala and Mauna. Mauna and Erin Trask today. This program was pre-recorded on January 11th, 2026. Gosh, is it January 11th already? How the heck does that happen? Anyway. And we thank you all for listening. Again, if you have questions or if you have comments or if you have ideas for future shows, you can always email gm@kkcr.org. And I'm just going to say, for the purposes of the recording, we're going to take a little break here in case they need to insert something. And there. Okay. So let's go on, because this is all like a bunch of robots sitting in a room trying to play by the rules, and there are no rules. We get to make them up. And that's kind of what you're just talking about, right? The animals and the plants didn't have rules that we know of. You know, the more we're learning about how plants communicate with each other, sounds to me like they've got rules. Anyway, it's really, 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 really interesting. I had a conversation with a young woman the other day who said, I said, what do you do? And she studies African medicinal plants, and she has an active practice in using them to treat dementia. And I said, why are you living in Hawaii? Because, you know, go study African plants in Africa. Anyway, it's things like that. There's so much. It seems to me that it's an example. And I immediately went to Dr. Google and tried to figure out, you know, what. But Aaron, I think in your studies, you're probably going to find, if not have already, which would be interesting to me, although I can't sit still in a classroom, so I'm useless. But if the things that Hawaii went through, kind of in the organization and all of the structure that had to be developed in order to not just kill each other, was sort of after a lot of other places had done it. Do you think, this is out of the blue, I know I do this to Mauna all the time, do you think that they modeled their system after anybody else, or did they just come up with what would work here?
I think that they came up with what would work here, mm-hmm. Like before contact.
Uh-huh.
So, because Hawaii is so unique, and it's really, society was really centered around, like we've been talking about, water.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Mauna Kea was saying, the leeward sides were the first occupied, and as the population increased, they needed more kalo, and it was the basic unit of the native political economy. So that's very different than anywhere else in the world. And the way the islands are geographically is different. So yeah, I don't really think they're copying. Maybe, you know, bringing the knowledge that they previously had from Tahiti and the Marquesas, but other than that, no.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's all one Polynesian people, right, that occupy. So the Polynesians occupy Polynesia. But upon contact, I mean, it takes a long time to sail a canoe from Marquesas or Tahiti to Hawaii. It's a treacherous journey. And it was sporadic contact. So you have periods of contact, periods of no contact. And in those times, it evolves. And so you have like a general, I think, base. And you see that in the myths and legends. Kanaloa is everywhere in Polynesia. But he's less popular here, and Ku's more popular here, and so you have this regional kind of evolution. But also too, everyone kind of, you know, we the world shares generally a common timeline because we measure everything from the Middle East and civilization, and there's contact. Hawaii was isolated. So as to be like different. And when you always analogize it to, if aliens ever do come down from space, it's going to be a heck of a lot like how it was in Hawaii, because you just have, you know, these people with shiny eyes. They're kind of short. They have big eyes. They come in this tech. Like Captain Cook was 5'2". You Kamehameha was 7 feet. You know, it's like little gray men, right? I mean, really. And they have all this, you know, boomsticks and stuff, and so it's wild. And then Hawaiians quickly adapt. And then it's interesting because, like Aaron said, study an ancient civilization, and Hawaii is always described as ancient, and it was because it was so limited materially. But if you look at it on its own timeline and according to its own material culture, it was extremely advanced. And so evolution, not as, you know, judged by Anno Domini Western religion sort of thing, but on its own, then you have it was appropriate for its place. And so the way everything kind of came up.
It fit the land. It fit the place. It fit the...
And interesting there. So it did fit the land, but, and I'll let Aaron read the quote, but it's actually all predicated on water. Like, you know, vi, kind of vi as well but it's not water for water's sake. It's water as the effect and influence, like you said, on everything. It's all water. So.
All right, so this quote is from Native Planters in Old Hawaii. It's from Mary Kavena Pukui. So what she says, this is on land, law, and water. Actually, water rather than land was the primary consideration for the taro planters who colonized Hawaii. So that's where we got the title from, too, because colonization is such a bad word right now. but she refers to the Hawaiians as colonizers. A place where there was a stream, Kahawai, namely a valley area where wet taro could be planted, was the basic unit of native political economy. The stream, Vai, tapped by irrigation ditches, Alvai, running to taro terraces, Lo'i, on the land and below the stream, all enclosed with ridges and hills that were the stream's watershed, was a territorial and geographical entity. It became the basic political unit, the ahupua'a, in the atonement of land to the chieftains who directed all local communal enterprise through a supervisor, konohiki. Law was a matter of water rights, period.
Mm-hmm. And like Aaron said, we're kind of coming to our own perspective on Hawaii as like positivists. And so we want to be proactivists, not reactivists. And if you look at, like Aaron said, there's a big movement, and it's good. We're not arguing that it's bad, but the chance of decolonization, right? Decolonize UH, decolonize your mind, decolonize. Without getting into the whole semantic argument of whether, in fact, Hawaii was ever truly colonized, we think that to be affirmative, instead of decolonizing UH, we should colonize it.
Yep.
And bring these ideas and elevate these ideas and find the and acknowledge, not find it, acknowledge the science and reality of the Hawaiian culture. And then it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I also want to let folks know
that the Water Commission meetings are recorded on YouTube. Just search them on YouTube. They're all there. They're fascinating. As well as the Board of Land and Natural Resource meetings, they're all on YouTube. They're free. They're interesting. And if you're not interested in what they're saying at that moment, the thing we wish we could do as most humans is you can fast forward and get past that stuff. But this stuff is available to us, folks. This conversation is happening today. Think of Maui. I mean, we have enough issues on Kauai, but think of Maui. It's almost like they're having to start from day one, and it's taking so long. And it's taking long because, in my humble opinion, some smart people and good people of the land are trying to do things correctly, and that takes time. And it takes trial and error. And I'm sure we all know families who have lost everything in Lahaina and who are actively participating in the redevelopment, if you will, the rebuilding or the building, because it just kind of evolved, you know, it just kind of happened as it happened, you know, the whalers and all that stuff. And we get to start over, and it's work and it's hard. And it's all about the water. Every conversation is about the water, and it's going to fall on the Water Commission. And I'm so grateful that we have people like Hannah Springer there as well, who are scholars and who think these things through and who understand the history and understand the governmental role or lack thereof or no need of, you know, let the people do what they know how to do. Kala farmers know how to do it. And it's such a struggle to see them testify there, to see them say no, that's not how this works. This is how this works. This is how I survive. This is how we feed ourselves. This is, and to watch the tension between that understanding and that knowledge and current government nonsense, and planners and everybody who thinks they know how to draw the lines around stuff. It's fascinating, Aaron, that the work you're doing right now is so pertinent to what's happening right now. This is today. This isn't, you know, it sounds like it's historical, and yes, it is, but no, it's not. It's right now. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that the classes are offered. I'm so glad that you're doing it, and ha ha ha. And I'm so glad your kids have to listen to the both of you now. Ha ha ha.
I do most of the listening.
Yeah, I would never survive in your familial structure. But are your kids interested? Are the younger people in the class interested in this at all, as it relates to stuff that's happening right now, or are they just looking at it as, yeah, that's what happened then?
Oh no, they're very interested, and the students at in the school are really interested. They don't have a lot of background knowledge, you know, unless they went to Kamehameha schools. So there's a lot of like out of state students.
Oh.
And one thing that I do kind of like have issue with is there's a little bit of a victim mindset when it comes to teaching Hawaiian history.
Yes.
I mean, in a way, rightfully so, but it's like the Hawaiian history is kind of mixed in with like Native American and Black history, and we're different here. So, but it's all kind of mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would be more beneficial to, you know, and first of all, I want to say there's a lot of grieving going on.
Yes.
With Native Hawaiians. It's been going on for a long time. And that's what most of the poetry is about. And it's important. Hawaiians are really good at grieving and all that. But
yes,
they're also really good at assessing challenges, building new systems, you know, developing new ways and evolving. So I think there should be a little bit more of an anti-victimization narrative. And some more like empowering agency. You know what I mean?
I do. I completely do. And I think there's a book. Yeah. I think there's a book in there. I think there's a, in my day we used to call it a flick. I think there's a movie in there, but I think there's a book there. I really think there's a book there because if you're somebody like me and you say, you know, you're just being a victim, or you're sounding like a victim, or you're behaving like a victim, that doesn't get a good response from people. You know, they just get mad at me. So kill the messenger. But I think, being a victim seems to be a pretty popular thing these days in the world in general. But certainly here in Hawaii, we feel it.
And part of like grieving, there's different stages and they don't all go linearly, but is denial.
Sure. That's the first one. That's the first one. It didn't really happen.
Right. And so like, I do hear a lot of denial in these narratives, you know, like we aren't this, we aren't that, we don't have to pay taxes. We, you know, people lose their houses because they're just denying the reality of life today. Something is supposed to be a certain way and it's not. And that's just not getting anybody anywhere positive. So there's a lot of questions that are unanswered. I don't have the answers to them. And some of these things are being taught in the university, which I think is dangerous, because
It's furthering. You know, it's furthering that mindset. It's supporting that mindset. It's, you know, I always ask them, if not, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to pay tax, for example. I don't want to pay land tax. No, but you want to drive on the road, and you want to dial 911, and you want to, you know, yeah. Well, you can't have it both ways, folks. You know, it's just. But that's victimization, and you're absolutely spot on, Erin. You're spot on. Mm-hmm. It's grieving, and it's taking longer than one would think it might, but it, you know, grieving takes the time it takes. There's no chronology or rules to there really aren't rules to grieving. It's a personal mm-hmm. thing, and it's a, and in this case, it's a communal thing. It's a community thing. It's a, you know, and people are capitalizing on it. You know, the fact that
exactly.
I don't like that either. I don't like that either. Do people stand up in class and say, no, I don't think that's true, or I think we should get away from that, or is there any kind of, when I was in university, you can well imagine I did a lot of, well, I questioned that. yeah, wasn't very popular then. It's probably not very popular now. It was supposed to be a safe place that you could say that, which I also kept reminding them of. Do people question that, or they're just going through the course, you know, reading the book they're supposed to.
Let me interject, because Erin has to be very political because she's still in it. But I think, you know, I'm always there when Erin, in the moments where she asks me stuff and like, what do you think about this? Or I heard that. Of course, I love to talk, and so I'll just mansplain all day. But she'll frequently tell me, oh, you know, you can't say that, or she'll do something, she'll write a paper and you won't get any comments. She'll get the A, but she won't get any comments on it because it is prickly. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, it's just, and you know this, universities have, there are narratives, there are story arcs,
there are donors.
Yeah, there's donors, there's place and time, and it's always, you know, UH is a political entity, right? It's a state agency, and there's just a lot going on with the Fed right now, and you know, Native Hawaiian stuff being framed as DEI in the mainland sense, and yes. I don't think it is at all. It's the history of these islands. It's the science of these islands. It's not grouped together with affirmative action. No, it's objective reality. But in any event, it is hard, you know, like anything, to mention these things. And I think it's not uncommon everywhere. It's, you know, the whole Palestinian issue and how that's discussed in universities throughout the country is really difficult, right? And I think it sounds like, from my perspective, it's similar with this, because, and you're right, it's a process that people go through, but
it's interesting. Yeah. It's university. I haven't thought about being, well, for a million reasons, I haven't thought about being in a university setting in a long time, but I do surround myself. I try very, very hard to surround myself with thinking people, with people who appreciate good discourse. I have a regular group of women that I gather with, and we're supposed to play Mahjong, but we seldom get to the Mahjong part. It's a group of women who are all educated and come from different parts of the world. And I said, have you ever wondered why people like me have an English first name? Have you ever wondered about that? They never even thought about it. I said it was a rule. It was the thing. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get a birth certificate if I didn't have what they called. But my mother said, she was told, your child must have a Christian first name. They didn't say English. They said Christian first name. And you couldn't get a birth certificate. Nurse is standing there with paperwork, writing down something. You got to write something. And of course, almost all of us have a Hawaiian name that is, you know, 26 letters long. It doesn't fit on our form anyway. This is not ancient history, folks. This is life today. Erin, what you're studying is going on around you. What a wonderful thing. What a terrifying, frightening, hard thing, but what a wonderful thing.
Well, yeah.
I would think.
Thank you.
Sure.
And I think and that's the importance of it is, you know, to know history, to understand how we got here, to definitely identify and learn from every single immorality and injustice that was ever perpetrated, but not to get stuck on it, right? It's Imua, it's not Rimua. It's, you know, we going forward over here.
That's a shirt.
Yeah, so. There's a shirt. Yeah. Laura Christine's sitting over here designing shirts. Yeah. I think, yes. And I hope that the conversations at UH are both that. I remember having classes that were all about what was then, and nobody talked about what is now or what could be. I had a hard time finding courses that were about what could be.
Yeah, there's a lot of looking to the past for, like, wisdom, like, as far as the Ahuwhua system, which is good. But one thing that's missing from the conversation is the fact that, the Ahuwhua system was enforced with the Kapu system, which meant sacrifices, death penalties, segregation between men and women. Which honestly, like, I would be all for.
Me too. Me too.
I would love to have
Mona and I have talked about this. Aaron, you and me, if we go forward together, me too. I don't even care if it's
and
just.
And the men cooked. They cooked everything. They cooked and cleaned. Like, we weren't allowed to do that. I wish that was the case. I would go back and play it. Yeah.
Plus, I didn't have to listen to him at least once a month. Oh yes. Oh yes. Oh yes. And I'm not kidding. I'm laughing, but I'm not kidding. I think it provided balance. I think it, you know, when you finally saw your partner, you were glad to see him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we kind of have that going on now. Like, Mauna Kea goes to Kauai sometimes for the week, and they were always happy to see each other.
Ain't it grand? But, ain't it grand?
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, is like the boys would move out and go live in the men's house. What age would they do that? 12 or something? Yeah, so there's a lot of cherry picking, like what, you know, we're going to do now, looking to the past. But there's also a lot of forgetting what it actually entailed.
Yes.
You know, like today, like men, full-grown men still live with their mommies.
Yeah.
And part of that's like the economy and all that. But in the past, they would move out. They wouldn't even be able to eat with their mothers. And they'd become men at a young age.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's largely informed by our 20-year-old still coming over and eating all our food.
There's a line with an arrow. It goes from the front door to the refrigerator door. And it's do not stop, do not pass go. This conversation, Aaron, is wonderful, and I will say this is exactly what Pilikia Opono is all about. This is exactly the theme that Laura Christine had in mind, and what Mauna and I have been trying to perpetuate. And because it's the two of us, you can imagine how often we get off track. But I think this is exactly what we meant. This is exactly what it is. And what do you hope to do at the end of all this? This is informing you. This is you informing them. This is, you know, a kind of a your schizophrenic life you're living right now. You know, as the mother and the matriarch, that kind of thing, and as well as the student. It's a little schizzy.
You know, a lot of what I do is going with the flow, and I do things without really knowing why. And in hindsight, I see why. That's how I live my life a lot of times. So I don't really know exactly what I'm going to do with this education. I know I want to finish it, maybe go on to get my master's. And I feel like as I go along, paths will open up.
Yeah.
So I'm living in the moment. I'm enjoying it. I'm exercising my brain at this elderly age, which is good. It's honestly, I suggest any woman go back to school. It you know, Mauna Kea and I have deeper conversations now. It's been good for our marriage. My kids are in college. They consider dropping out just like I did and get distracted because they're making money. And, you know, and I can be here and tell them, you don't want to be in school when you're in your 40s. Like, just keep going.
Yeah, this is hard. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you don't, do you not want to be like me? This is so humbling and embarrassing to go back to college in your 40s. Like, just, you know, so I can be a real life example. So there's so many benefits, but I don't actually know exactly what I'm going to do with the education yet.
Well, that's
and
okay.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. You shouldn't. You shouldn't.
Well, and just on that point, like, you know, and like Aaron said, there's a constant discussion in our house on what's the point of this? How would it ever use? And our son, God bless him. I mean, I would love to see a Hawaiian make tons of money in real estate and finance. Like, go for it, dude. But that really, if you look, and especially nowadays, we can't forget that education itself is the end. You know, it's the one, you can, fortunes are made and lost every day. Jobs are made and lost every day. Unfortunately, families, you know, things come and go. But no one can ever take your education away from you.
Nope.
That is extremely valuable. On average, you make like a couple million more than if you weren't. And no one can take it. No one can take that paper. And let's not forget that. That's the ike. That's the foundation of everything, right?
So, yeah. And it makes a difference. Right. And it makes a difference in how we take care of things and how we take care of our place and how we take care of each other and ourselves. It makes a difference.
Yeah, and it's not guaranteed. I mean, you know, at one point, certain countries were so great, women weren't allowed to go to school. And they may be great like that again. Who knows? And so get it, right?
That's not happening.
Well, you can't. Okay.
Yeah. That's not happening. We got smarter. I where are we on time, Laura? It's really hard for me to tell.
Like 2 minutes.
2 minutes. We've got 2 minutes left. Erin, I want to hear what you're working on now. I want to hear. So that was the paper that you wrote. I love the name. And yes, for heaven's sakes, copyright it. Are you kidding? But what's next? What are you working on now, and what's next for you?
Well, I'm on break right now, so
the semester starts
this week. Yeah, so I'm not working on anything. I'm just chilling. But I will let you know, because the semester starts tomorrow, and I have a bunch of other new classes, and it'll be exciting.
Is it hard to find room in the classes? Is the university full?
Yeah, it's full. So I have a strategy, though. I just obsessively check. I waitlist classes.
Yeah.
And I email teachers, and it's a way of weeding out the good teachers, honestly, because the ones that get back to me, I know are going to be good and responsive.
Oh.
Yeah. And then the ones that never respond, I don't want their class anyway. So I always end up getting the class that I want. I just, you know, be patient and go on the wait list. And then
nag them to death. Yeah. I think that's an interesting strategy for you to share for younger people who are in that system, in that process. You know, my day, teachers didn't communicate with students directly like that. You know, there was no email. There was no, I don't remember communicating with many of my professors except for my big mouth in the class. But, you know, it just, yeah. So, I'm so glad you came on. And as soon as you're doing your next thing, we want to do this again. This was great. And as I say to everyone who comes on the radio with me, they're terrified. No.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're kind. I think it let people know that it didn't hurt, it wasn't painful, and that you can say what you want to say. You know, that's the whole idea here. The idea of this program is to talk about what was and what is and the relationship, and how we can plan and work for a future that fits, a future that fits, you know, for all of us. And we're so grateful that we have a community radio station. We ask everyone to recognize the fact that not everybody has a community radio station, and if there's activity on Oahu while you're over there, Erin, push your way through that door and say, you know, I want to talk about this. I want to do this in the community, and turn some of your writing into letters to the editor and stuff like that. OP pieces, you know. Do it. Use it, because, you know, you're in a perfect position right now of learning stuff and having a multi-generational household at the same time is pretty amazing. And thank you, Mauna, for, I'm sure you had to do a little bit of encouraging, let's put it that way, for Aaron to come on. So thank you. Thank you both. This is Pilikia Opono, and this is a recorded program, and it will be broadcast on Wednesday morning at 7 a.m., which we will hope that you will listen in. And if you have comments, please remember you can email gm@kkcr.org. This is Maka'ala thanking Aaron and Mauna Kea Trask. Aloha.
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 That was amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much.
It was amazing.
Right on, you guys. I'm going to forward you to. I'm going to forward you her paper to post.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yay!
I want to read it.
But protect it, Aaron, Mauna. Protect it, because she's going to make $1 million selling that book.
That's why I sent her to school. There's a ton of money in Hawaiian history, so make that money.
God love it. God love it. I love it. And try to let's try to see each other nose to nose next time you're on Kauai, Aaron. I'd love to see you.
Okay. Will do.
Nice. Okay.
I haven't been there for a while. Yeah. I gotta get back.
Yeah, you need to. You need to. Maybe not Omau. Maybe Hanalei.
Auntie, what is it? Kalmwana Gmail or Watershed Hui?
Oh, we saved our for this show. It better be Kalmwana@gmail.
Okay.
I'm schizophrenic, like four different emails for four different reasons, because I was told by lawyers like you.
That's right.
That's keep right.
Okay, and Laura, I'm sending it to GM.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Aloha, you guys.
Okay, aloha.
Bye, bye.
Thank you, Aaron.